Hello there. It is Eric Erickson here, the Eric Erickson Show. The phone number is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. A vexing question hovered over the United States women's soccer team Tuesday evening. Is good enough good enough? At major tournaments, the Americans cleave through the group stage. At these Olympics, they escaped it. The United States reached the quarterfinals with a nil draw against Australia, a result it engineered as much as it achieved. So dominant, so venerated, and so drenched in championships and world-class stars, the United States typically operates with earned athletic arrogance, wounded by a rare blowout loss to Sweden in its opener. The United States resorted against the ninth-ranked team in the world to conservatism. It needed only a draw to advance. Coach Vladko Andonovski, making his major tournament debut with the women, instituted a game plan for just that purpose. It worked. The United States withstood initial pressure from the Matildas, oppressed super forward Sam Kerr, and played the majority of the second half on Australia's side of the field. It achieved its aim with a 4-4-2 formation and patience. Australian coach Tony Gustafsson, a former U.S. assistant, said he could tell from the first 5 minutes his opponent would employ a new defensive shape and press less than I'm used to seeing. For most teams, it would have been an expected strategy. It may also have been a savvy demonstration of U.S. flexibility. It still seemed odd to watch the United States and its familiar swashbuckling stars sink into a defensive shell. I actually find this very funny. I do, and I shouldn't, but I do. The U.S. women's soccer team, I read you the hagiographic coverage right there. And the reality, the truth is behind the scenes, and it is shocking. It tells you everything you need to know that the women's team gets that coverage and is playing as poorly as it is now, and that no one will go on record. They only want to talk on background to say they're getting kind of old. They're getting kind of old. And Megan Rapone is blaming everyone but herself for their performance. But the reality is they built this team. This team has dominated for a while. It's become such an iconic team. Let me just read you again how the Washington Post describes them. So dominant, so venerated, and so drenched in championships and world-class stars, the United States operates with earned athletic arrogance. And now they're not winning as much. Why? Because they're getting older. And you can't say that on the record. You'll get attacked. But it's the truth. Keep an eye on this. Now, we got to keep an eye on another story. Outside of the Wall Street Journal editorial board, this is a story that's not getting a lot of attention, and it should be. Progressives are starting to fight each other over gun policy. And there's a really big case headed to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the Progressive Criminal Legal Aid Society in New York is asking the Supreme Court to expand gun rights. And it's having some perverse problems for the progressives. Let me read you this. This is editorial of the Wall Street Journal. For the elite left, opposition to gun rights is in part a cultural statement of antipathy to red state values. Yet a small but important part of the progressive coalition, criminal defense lawyers, can't afford to treat gun laws as one more culture war fight. Hence, a remarkable amicus brief by a collection of defense lawyers for the indigent, led by the Black Attorneys of Legal Aid, asking the Supreme Court to expand gun rights in the Second Amendment case it will decide next term. The case concerns New York State's stringent gun restrictions. The plaintiffs in New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruin say New York all but prohibits ordinary adults from obtaining a license to bring a firearm outside their home or business, even if they fear for their safety, complete training courses, and have a clean background. They want the Supreme Court to affirm that the Constitution protects that right. The media framed the case as a conservative versus liberal clash. You'll remember Sheldon Whitehouse, the Rhode Island senator and other Democratic senators, sent the justices a threatening brief in 2019, suggesting the court might need to be restructured if it accepted a previous gun case out of New York. Now President Biden has impaneled a court packing commission. Yet the brief from the criminal defense lawyers, which includes the Brooklyn Defenders and Brooklyn Defender Services, argues against the state's gun laws from a progressive position. In 2020, while black people made up 18% of New York's population, they accounted for 78% of the state's felony gun possession cases, the brief said. It notes that for a defendant, separately having ammunition makes a gun loaded, and that possessing a loaded gun without a permit, even if not used, is a violent felony that carries a 3.5 to 15-year prison sentence. The lawyers see a reality of gun control that the left doesn't. While the plaintiffs in the case mainly attack the gun carry rules, the defense lawyers also argue their indigent clients have been wrongfully punished for having guns at home. The state's application process for keeping a gun at home is less restrictive. Now, I'll stop reading here and just give you the down low. If you carry a gun outside your home in New York City, or New York State generally, and you have ammunition in your pocket and it is not in your gun is in your briefcase, the ammunition is in your pocket, you are in New York under New York law carrying a loaded firearm. And if your firearm is loaded in New York, keep in mind the bullets are all in your pocket and the gun is in your briefcase, you're holding your briefcase in your hand, but that's considered a loaded weapon under New York State criminal law. And that's considered a violent felony. If you carry a gun outside your home in New York and you don't have a concealed carry permit, you're violating the law. You're carrying bullets in your pocket, a gun in your briefcase. You're committing a violent felony in New York, even though you're just walking down the street. You're going to a gun range, something. Not only that, but New York makes it almost impossible to get a concealed carry permit. One of the things that the indigent criminal defense lawyers brief from New York states is that in New York, if you have been a regular, pay attention to this part, a regular victim of crime, not meaning you're just an ordinary victim, but it has happened to you more than once. You have been a victim of crime repeatedly. That's not a reason for a concealed carry permit. It's not a reason for a concealed carry permit in New York. So how do you get one? It's a very, very, very difficult to get one in New York. And a lot of people take matters into their own hands. This reminds me of my wife. My wife, when we were in college, she worked at a Kroger. She was a cashier at a Kroger. And it was not in a good part of our city. And the police constantly asked her why she was not carrying a weapon. And her response was that she was 18 years old. It was against the law for her to have a concealed weapon. And the police told her, forget the law. Your safety is more important. The police were telling my wife that she should break the law to protect herself. In New York, the police will arrest you if you try to take care of yourself. You know, the reality is you got a criminal at your door. You got a criminal coming down the street towards you. Criminal is walking down the street. They got a baseball bat. They got a knife or they got a gun. And you call 911. You're going to be dead before the police get to you. Unless you protect yourself. And progressive politicians don't seem to understand this. And, you know, as well, there's a lot of data out there on, you know, Joe Biden. I mentioned this yesterday. Joe Biden said that the reason we're seeing an uptick in gun violence and guns is because a lot of people are buying guns from gun dealers who are ignoring law and not doing background checks. That's not actually true at all. And there is ample data out there that shows what Joe Biden said isn't true. And yet he doesn't seem to care, nor do the fact checkers who obsessed about Donald Trump and telling the truth. They're not fact checking him. Now, I should tell you, the Stephen Gutowski at The Reload, he's got this piece up about Joe Biden and the data. And the data, frankly, does not bear out what Joe Biden claimed. The data doesn't suggest what Joe Biden has stated about gun violence. In fact, what it does show is that the guns that are being used in crime are stolen guns. They're not guns being lawfully purchased. Well, they're being lawfully purchased. They're being lawfully purchased by people going through background checks, and then the guns are being stolen. People are victims of crimes. I mean, heck, we had a situation in my neighborhood where I live where a particular family, they're now in jail, was going through people's cars at night. My neighborhood is it's a safe neighborhood. And a lot of people leave their cars unlocked at night. And some of those people, for reasons beyond me, have left their guns in their car. And I mean, this is a pet peeve of my wife, the people who leave their guns in their cars unlocked. If you're going to leave your gun in your car, put it in a gun safe and make sure it's not going to be able to get out of your car. But nonetheless, people do it. And it was a regular thing for a while in our neighborhood until people started having their cars broken in. And it turns out it was someone in the neighborhood who was doing it and then reselling the guns to criminals. And that person is now in prison. That's how the guns get out there. Law-abiding citizens buy the guns, go through a background check, and then the gun gets stolen. And they report the gun stolen, by the way. The left, it's like they don't understand. They don't shoot guns. They don't buy guns. They don't use guns. They don't have guns. And so you hear them say stuff, and this is part of the problem for progressive activists against guns right now, is we've now got more guns in this country. There are like, I think, 2 to 3 guns per person in the United States. We got the most guns in the world in the United States. That's why no one's ever going to be able to successfully invade the United States, in addition to being in the North American continent, surrounded by the Atlantic, the Pacific, Canada, and Mexico, and the Rio Grande. Everybody's got a gun. Well, not everybody, but a lot of people have guns. They got 2 or 3 guns. They got stockpiles of ammunition. I got a buddy down the street from me. He's got an entire room in his house that is nothing but guns and ammo. I'm actually deeply jealous and impressed. And what's so striking here is the number of people who are on the left who don't have guns, have never bought a gun, have never fired a gun, who are convinced that their talking points are sound, and more Americans now own guns. They're like, that's not the way it works. Like a suppressor. The number of people, and I will confess, until I used one, I really did. You see the Hollywood movies, and in the Hollywood movies, James Bond puts the silencer. It's really a suppressor on the gun. It's pew, pew. That's not actually the way it works. If you've only seen it in the movies, you think you fire a loaded gun with a silencer on the front of it, it's going to go pew, pew. No. It goes bang, bang. You can hear it. It's just not loud enough to rupture your eardrums or make your ears ring. I went out to Las Vegas back in March, and I fired a machine gun that had a suppressor built into it, and they made us take our ear protection off to fire the gun. I want one so bad. And like, you can't buy it because they're pre-1982. You can get it, and it's like $60,000 to get one of these guns. And I want one. I'm never going to get one. But, I mean, you could fire the sucker without your ear protection on. But you could still hear. It wasn't pew, 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 pew. No, it was bang, 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 bang. You could still hear it loud. But the left seems to, because the left, their arguments for gun control and banning guns and the things they say is flat out not true. And you've got more new gun owners in the last 2 years than in the last decade combined. And now people are out there practicing, they're firing their guns. And people are realizing, wait a second, all these arguments from the left on gun control, if they're getting all of this stuff wrong, I bet they're getting the rest of it wrong. And meanwhile, you've got now progressive criminal defense attorneys in New York saying, hey, you know what? We need concealed carry in New York because the progressive politicians are rounding up black people who are trying to protect themselves, and they're denying them gun permits, and they're having to take the law into their own hands to protect themselves. Why are they the criminals? The criminals are the progressives preventing people from protecting themselves. It's a good argument.
Well, I saw the headline, and I knew immediately that it was Greg Locke. Greg Locke is the Tennessee pastor who he has told staff. Well, let me just read you the story. This is from the Charlotte Observer. A Tennessee pastor threatened to boot mask wearers from his Tennessee church as some places are taking additional measures to help protect against the more contagious coronavirus Delta variant. If they go through round two and you start showing up with all these masks and all this nonsense, I will ask you to leave. Greg Locke told his Nashville area congregation during a service on Sunday, I will ask you to leave. I'm not playing these Democrat games up in this church. He's the head of the Global Vision Bible Church. He's criticized officials for raising possible things. Locke is an odd guy who really needs more prayer than anything. He always says outlandish stuff to get attention, and it makes other Christians look bad. He's hyper partisan. You know, I had a conversation the other day. Y'all would all know who it is. Y'all all love the guy. He's got a new book he's writing on religion, and he was telling me, he's a political guy, he's been writing religion, and he says, you know, I'm where you are, that sometimes your audience gets mad at you claiming you're preachy when you start talking about theology and faith. They just want to hear you talk about politics, and I'm in the same way, and now I'm in the situation where I don't want my pastor in the pulpit to talk politics at all. I want him to talk about the Bible. Yes, I'm 1,000% yes. I do not, when I go to church, need to hear a political sermon. I need to hear the Bible. People say don't talk about religion, politics. I talk about both all the time. I'm ready to get back to seminary. Now that I'm only doing 3 hours a day, it's probably time for me to get back to RTS and finish up my degree. I had to put it on hold for a while because doing 6 hours of radio a day, there was just no way. But I miss being in class in seminary. I really do miss it a lot. And I want to go back. But, you know, there's a difference between me being here on talk radio and talking about all the stuff that you and I together find interesting and being in a pulpit on a Sunday. I love to preach on Sundays. I haven't been asked in a long time to preach on Sunday. And a lot of it now is, oh, well, you talk politics on the radio. Maybe you shouldn't. And I get that. I do. But I like to be able to go in and actually just spend time on Sundays preaching and not talking politics, where you can find common ground with people you may disagree with politically and actually find common ground over scripture. It just doesn't happen a lot anymore. But I know I would not want to go into a church and deliver a political message. And I just can't process the pastors who spend their time talking politics from the pulpit.
Welcome back. It is Eric Erickson. The phone number, should you wish to be a part of this year program, is 877-97-ERICK, E-R-I-C-K. That's 877-973-7425. I am going to go to the phones to David, who has been waiting patiently. David, welcome to the program. David? Well, I think David disappeared. Sorry, David. I didn't come to him soon enough. He was on hold for a little while. I guess he gave up hope. Never give up hope, folks. I get to you eventually, unless my call screener puts a note in and says, don't go to this person. You know, you would be amazed at he's going to get mad at me. The number of people who want to call this program I like having people who are willing to call in and disagree. People think that talk show hosts actually only want sycophants to call in. I don't. Your job is to make me look good. And the way you make me look good is you ask a question and I answer the question and provide an intelligent answer to your intelligently formed question.
And occasionally people want to call in and they want to disagree with me. Like Dale earlier wanted to take up for Biden and that he really is in charge. Perfectly happy to have someone call in and disagree. Though I am stunned by the number of people who want to just call a radio show and think they have a right to be on the program, who want to hijack the conversation and be nonsensical, and they're just jerks. You know, I am perfectly willing to agree to disagree with someone on the phone or to debate someone. But when you're calling in and you're just argle-bargle word salad arguing, there's no point in having you in. The audience leaves dumber than when they began by having you on the program. And occasionally those people are deeply insistent they should be on the program. They don't make it past the call screener. They call back and chew out the call screener, cuss out the call screener. My call screener was a virgin lover of humanity, loved everyone and puppies, thought the whole world was driven by rainbows, and then he regularly began to encounter callers to talk radio. And slowly, over time, pieces of his soul began to die. And now he hates humanity. He is the ultimate cynic. He cannot abide or tolerate people because of what calling has done to him over time. It deeply wrecked his soul. He's now a just malevolent soul when it comes to talking to people on the phone for this program because of the idiot call screen. And so what happens, by the way, Charlie, Andrew says you never had a soul. But so callers, I mean, occasionally they literally cuss out my call screener. And so what he does is, all right, I'll let you on. And he puts them on hold and puts a little note and says, don't take this person. And so I've had people literally sit on hold for 2.5 hours. 2.5 hours, thinking that I'm actually going to get to them. No, you have to get through the call screener to get onto a radio program. Now, some radio programs, the not very good ones, they tend to have no standards in calls. I actually keep a very high standard. Why? Because I learned from Rush Limbaugh that the best callers get through, the bad callers don't. And Rush had Bo Snerdly, who for years, and you should know, Bo Snerdly helped train my call screener. When I would fill in for Rush, my call screener would hang out and watch how Snerdly screen phone calls. And we learned from the best. And so you got to have high standards. So the number of people who just think they're entitled to get on a talk radio program, you would be stunned at the entitlement mentality of people. It's pathetic, but some of them do. If you want to call in and get past the call screener, the phone number is 877-973-7425. But I don't know that I need any of you to call in now when we've only got 10 minutes left and I got something I need to talk about. The shooter of the spas in Atlanta is pleading guilty. Remember this a while back? I got to say something on this that I'm going to get in trouble for. Might as well hit the record button and put this up there so Media Matters can attack me. This is from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Robert Aaron Long, accused of fatally shooting 8 people at 3 Metro Atlanta spas, has pled guilty to 4 of the murders in a deal formalized Tuesday in a Cherokee County courtroom. The agreement spares him a death sentence, though that possibility remains in Fulton County, where District Attorney Fannie Willis says she will seek the death penalty for the 22-year-old defendant. Regardless, Long's deal with Cherokee prosecutors ensures he will spend the rest of his life in prison. He was handed 4 consecutive life sentences plus 35 years without the possibility of parole. Remember, this was anti-Asian violence. It was anti-Asian violence he was lashing out. Actually, what rapidly got buried is that the young man, Robert Aaron Long, blamed the spas for nursing his sexual addiction. Are we allowed to talk about the number of Asian-themed massage parlors in the Southeast that operate as brothels? You notice how the conversation just went away, and you're not supposed to talk about this anymore. Or if you do, it's supposed to be between consenting adults. And actually, the data doesn't suggest that at all. In many cases, it is human trafficking involved. And I say this as someone who is not a visitor of these places, but when I was on city council in Macon, Georgia, went after these places and regulated them out of business after multiple police raids where there were clear signs of human trafficking at Asian-themed massage parlors, and suddenly we're not allowed to have this conversation because they're the victims here. And yet, you know what? They are the victims. In this particular case, they are the victims. And in some cases, it was just legitimate people doing legitimate massages. But I don't think we should dance around the fact that the guy was very explicit. Everyone was like, oh, he hates Asians. He hates Asians. No, he was going to the Asian-themed massage parlors to have sex. He didn't hate them. He liked them a little bit too much. And he blamed them. He was a church-going Christian who was convicted of his own sin and crazy and took matters into his own hands and did the wrong thing, made the terrible choice. And he's a murderer and will be in prison for the rest of his life and may still get the death penalty. May God have mercy on his soul. The state will not. But there was this rush, this absolute rush to say this was anti-Asian hate. And in fact, the number of people who weeks later, after the truth came out that no, he was going to these places for sex. He didn't hate them. He was going to them for sex. Weeks after that came out, you were still having people in the media running stories of, in Atlanta, the Asian community fears the potential violence given the shooter of the massage parlors. He didn't hate the people he killed. He blamed them for propping up his sexual addiction. And yet, we continue to hear these stories of anti-Asian violence. And you know, the anti-Asian violence of this country, it actually does happen. But statistically, according to the FBI's own statistics, who commits the most violence against Asian Americans in this country? Young black men. Number two, who commits the most violence against Asians? Young Asian men. White people are number three, Hispanic people number four. But the media has run multiple stories that it's actually white supremacy that's the problem. White supremacy is the problem. You had a professor at the University of Colorado Boulder who actually wrote that even though the plurality of violence against Asians in this country is by young black men, they're actually just lashing out because they too are victims of white supremacy. This is where the critical theorists end up. It's always the white people's fault. In this case, you have young white man who lashed out, proof of anti-Asian violence. You know, they now talk about the AAPI, the Asian American Pacific Islander. That's actually not a thing. It's not a thing. The government created that category in the 70s for census purposes, and the woke activists have embraced it as if it is a real thing. There's no such thing as an Asian American Pacific Islander, except for the census. And now the government has embraced it. There's a real tragedy here. There is. People are dead. And it's a sad and tragic thing. But we shouldn't make this more than what it is. Long said the decision to kill himself March 16th at Young's Asian Massage was born of shame. He told the judge he was embarrassed and ashamed when his roommate overheard him watching pornography in his room and asked him about it, and he refused to discuss it. It never felt like I had a lot of control over those urges, and it became obsessive to the point it occupied a lot of my thoughts. His addiction to porn hurt a lot of relationships in his life, and I still found myself going back to it. As he spoke, he was even-tempered, clear and forthcoming. He didn't appear emotional. It's taking something I believe to be meant in a monogamous relationship between a man and a woman and making sport of it without any relationship going into it and essentially taking sex out of the context I believe to be only correct in a relationship. I wanted to stop the places and basically punish the people that I could. When Long arrived at Big Woods Goods gun store in Holly Springs, he says he chose one of the cheaper 9mm handguns and a box of 50 bullets. His account was overdraft when he tried to make the $460 purchase, but he returned with bills after cashing a work check. From there, he drove to a liquor store for a fifth of Four Roses bourbon because he was scared to kill himself. He drank in the parking lot of the spa for about an hour, he said, hoping he would hate himself enough at that point to end his own life. He was sitting in the car when he began thinking about killing the people inside. He was a frequent of Young's in the past. He described it as shifting the blame from himself to those inside the spa. I wanted to stop the places that basically punish the people. That was his testimony. And it wasn't anti-Asian hate. And it was hate. But I think we should be careful how we frame this, and we should not avoid talking about the rest of it. And yet, for some reason, we're supposed to not talk about what else was happening. And while we should say this is the guy who did wrong, this is the guy who's to blame, this is the guy who should go to prison if not get the death penalty, we should also be real clear and set the record straight that it wasn't about anti-Asian hate. And yet so much of the left immediately swung into action on this and said that's what it was. And we now know for certain it wasn't. And you will notice as a result how quickly the conversation about this particular incident has gone away. But today, the sentencing is happening in Cherokee County, Georgia, and the guy is telling his side of the story and confessing what he did and saying why he did it. And there wasn't hate involved. It was him crazy, deranged, out of his mind, ashamed of his sin, blaming other people for his sexual addictions. And that's what it was about. I'm just so tired of people grabbing these stories and twisting to fit their narrative when the narrative doesn't work and they try so hard to make it. And the media, of course, being on the left, grabs hold of the narrative and runs with it, even when it's not true. Truth matters. Truth matters. The truth that matters to you is that you can get a great cell phone company in America right now that is not one of the big ones, that is not a woke one, that is a conservative one, that is a Christian one, that has your back, that donates to causes you care about, from pro-life causes to Second Amendment causes to veterans causes to first responder causes. In fact, you can get discounts if you're a veteran or a first responder, or you're got a large family, you need a lot of lines. Patriot Mobile is the solution for you. They're the only Christian conservative wireless carrier in America. It is important to support companies. You don't have to boycott companies, but boycott. Buy from companies that support your values. And Patriot Mobile does, and they want to be your cell phone carrier. So I want you to check them out. They give great discounts. You can get premier activation from Patriot Mobile. What you do is you go to patriotmobile.com/Eric. You'll see my face, for better or worse. E-R-I-C-K, patriotmobile.com. And they got U.S.-based customer service. You can call them. You don't have to go to the website. You can call them at 972-PATRIOT, 972-PATRIOT. But here's the thing. You guys are always asking me, what can we do? I want to support companies that support me. Well, you support Patriot Mobile. They can port your phone number over. So you can keep your same cell phone number. If you've got an unlocked phone, you can probably even keep your own cell phone. Like, I got an iPhone and it was unlocked. You can swap it over to Patriot Mobile. Their network is nationwide. So if you're listening to me right now, they service your area. PatriotMobile.com/Eric is the website. Support the companies that support you. Here is a cell phone carrier that gives great rates, reasonable plans, nationwide, discounts for veterans and first responders, and those who have large families and need a lot of cell phones on their line. Go to PatriotMobile.com/Eric today. Roll over to Patriot Mobile and start supporting companies that have your back. Hello there. It is Eric Erickson here. All right. Keep in mind, on Friday, we're going to talk a little bit about Children's Healthcare of Atlanta, which I don't care where you are. I know we've got listeners now beyond the state of Georgia. Looking at the live stream listeners, we're in every state in the nation, even though we're not on terrestrial radio stations in necessarily every state. But Children's Healthcare of Atlanta helps kids all over the country, particularly in the Southeast, where most of my listeners are. And I want to spend a little time on Friday talking about that. There are some opportunities for you to hang out with me and drink from my bourbon collection we'll talk about. But I need to ask you a favor. Meditate on this for the next few days. You're going to go out today. You're going to make a financial choice to buy food or buy coffee or something. Can you save that money up and save it for what we're going to do later this week to raise money for fighting childhood cancer. My wife has lung cancer. There's no cure. It's genetic, but she takes a pill every day that keeps the cancer from spreading. It's the same, pretty much the same cancer Rush had. People thought that he had a cancer from smoking. No, it's genetic, like my wife. He and I have talked about this on several occasions. They just caught his too late. I was stunned. We got our kids the vaccine. They took the Pfizer vaccine. They had their second round on Friday. Friday at 5. Saturday at 5 a.m., they woke up vomiting, headache, and high fever, 102.5. And by Saturday evening, it was as if nothing had ever happened. It was 12 hours of misery and then nothing. And people are like, I can't believe you'd subject your kids to that, to a disease that has a 99% survival rate. I can't believe you'd subject your kids to an experimental vaccine. I thought I should be able to raise my kids how I see fit. My wife has an incurable form of lung cancer. Would you rather my kids get the virus and potentially give it to my wife and then for the rest of their lives wonder if they hurt their mom? It's amazing how people have become so dogmatic they don't even want to think. I'm not telling anyone. I think you probably should. I think the vaccine's fine. I've had it. My kids have had it. My wife's had it. With vaccines, if there are side effects, you typically find them in the first 2 months. People are making mountains out of molehills over this stuff. But I don't think you should be badgered. I just think you should. But I think you should leave me the hell alone as well. And if I want to get my family vaccinated, spare me your lectures. It is remarkable how dogmatic people are becoming about just the most minor things in life. I shared about my kids' experience because it actually is fairly common for there to be that side effect. And I know I have a lot of people who listen who are parents who are thinking of giving their kids the vaccine. And I want them to know that it is fine. It is safe. You can do it. Our kids have done it. My 15-year-old daughter, my 12-year-old son. And yes, the second round, they may have a reaction. Our kids were fairly sure had COVID. They had the symptoms, but they tested negative, which is why the doctors had to go on and give them the vaccine. And now we as a family, we feel fine. And my kids are now asking, do I have to wear a mask anywhere? I said, I don't care what the CDC says. You don't have to wear a mask anymore. You're vaccinated. We'll be fine. And my wife is fine and I am fine and you'll be fine too. Don't fret about it. So many people want to worry about so much stuff these days. You know, worrying's a sin. There's no reason to spend your life worrying about a bunch of stuff. Let the worries go. Just live your life and don't live in fear. Jesus loves you. Well, maybe not you, but the rest of y'all. Yes, Jesus loves y'all.